You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back, everybody. Jim Donovan, Vic Carucci, Nathan Zagura will come up later on in the show. Gerard Cherry's been on the show. Vic, do we go to the hotline? Is it called the hotline right now on Cleveland Browns Daily?
You can call anything you want to, sure.
All right.
Hotline sounds good.
Is it the call to the bullpen? No, that's in the other sport, I believe it is, huh? Anyway, you're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR. We'll go to the hotline right now, and we'll be joined by Plain Dealer columnist Terry Pluto. Welcome in, Terry. 2-0 during the preseason, and the town's got a little buzz about the Browns. Are you feeling that at all?
I think so, because it's not just that they've been winning. They've actually been getting in the end zone, Jim.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
No, seriously, you know how hard that's been, more than anybody, because you don't get to say the word touchdown unless it's the other team. And so I think that's what people have been excited about, is then, yeah, they played well, but they played well on offense especially.
You know what they used to, if you could describe their play, you're right about that, because really how the Browns used to have to win was to control the game defensively, to have an outstanding game, usually, Terry, from their punter, to have a field position game, and to rely on Phil Dawson to kick field goals. That was the way they would win.
Yeah, you heard all this manage the game stuff.
They manage the game, yeah.
We have to play the perfect game.
Right.
We can have self-inflicted wounds, and hey, nobody likes penalties and that kind of stuff, but the fact remains, when you throw the ball downfield, get big chunks of yards, and look, there's a whole momentum thing, and it is real in football. You know, people are cheering, the offense is feeling good about itself, and I think what it's Brandon put up, he's got 3 touchdown passes already, I think 5 of the 6 possessions he's had. Touchdowns or field goals, and there's been at least 3 touchdowns, if not 4, I forgot which, but isn't it great they got more touchdowns than you can count?
Terry Pluto joins us from the Cleveland Plain Dealer. Do you sense, Terry, in a bigger picture look at this thing, a greater sense of competence with the group that's running this team? And it's bigger than just 2 preseason games, so I'm asking you to maybe broaden the lens here based on your time around training camp, your time around the facility. Any sense that you feel better about? I know you've had a chance to sit down with Joe Banner and really kind of dig in. So what are your what's your overall big picture takeaway on the organization?
Well, the I think the premium placed on figuring out exactly how you want to play, and then getting the coaches that are going to put that type of offense and defense in, and you're basing that on. These are the type of schemes that win. Right now, the league changes all the time. I think, like Joe Banner's run a team for 15 years in Philadelphia, and it's easy in Philly to be negative in that, but I think any Browns fan would have traded the Eagles record for the last since 1999 for the Browns record since 1999. Let's get real here. He must have been doing something right, probably quite a bit right. And secondly, just like there's been a couple things already that came up, and, he's issued statements or got out in front of it, were in a past that separate his linger and fester. Or the poor coach would have to answer some big picture question. It really isn't in his ballpark. So I on that part, I like it. And I also like I wrote about this with Brandon Wheat, the approach the offensive coaches have taken, Chud and Turner, to build an offense around them. I mean, they talk about scheme and this, but it's so flexible. It isn't just the West Coast offense that Mike Holmgren way. You can just see they're fitting him, fitting the parts around him and taking what he does and accenting it and trying to hide the weaknesses. I mean, this sounds real obvious, but so many football people can be so rigid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the getting out in front of topics.
Yeah.
That's very, very important, because we can all critique Pat Shurmur and his sideline control of the game and his calling of the game. But I thought a couple of times he was up there and he was a fish out of water, because he had to talk about topics, that really needed to be addressed by somebody that had a higher pay scale than he did. And I know he was paid well, but I mean, he was out of his element doing that. And I agree with you about that. It takes the pressure off of a head coach when there is a definitive figurehead in the organization, and in this case it's Joe Banner, and if something arises that needs to be addressed in his arena, then I think he comes out and he does it. I really do believe that's important, and I think it gives everybody the feeling that somebody is in charge.
Well, there are two examples that came right away to mind with Shermer. Number one, when Hillis had his basically contract issues and strep throat, whatever. That's the GM or president's ballpark thing.
Right.
That's not his. Secondly, was McCoy's concussion and the issues after that. I mean, McCoy was almost like, you know, on his fourth year in the league before they finally addressed that thing. I mean, it just seemed to go on forever. And there's Shermer trying to explain this, but it really was somebody else. Even if that president comes out and says, look, we don't have all the facts now. We're really looking into it. We're not sweeping this under the rug. Even if he says, I'll get back to you. But he comes out and says, we're worried about this, and I'll get back to you. That takes the heat off. And, you know, we say, hey, with your partner, you know, with Bernie, I mean, Joe came out right away, could argue whether what he said was correct or not. But I tell you, in a lot of ways, it put an end to quite a bit of it there.
Right.
First of all, saying Bernie ain't going anywhere. You start with that. So I've been impressed. I remember there's a couple other things that he's already said that, you know, when I look at organizations, that's one of the things you see. Do they get out in front or do they just let these things linger?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We are a city, don't you think, that really, and in the NFL, you got to have a quarterback. We are a city that really wants a quarterback because we realize how important it is. And we've gone through a ton of them in every kind of way, Terry. I mean, they've drafted them first in the draft.
Mm-hmm.
They've taken them later in the draft and hoped that there have been projects. McCoy was a third-round pick. You know, they've gone the free agent route and brought a veteran in here, Trent Dilfer, Jeff Garcia, Jake DeLome. Do you think you're seeing any signs, and I know it's only two preseason games, any signs that Whedon might be the guy?
Well, I think what you're seeing is at least it could be a middle-of-the-pack NFL quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And now that doesn't sound like much unless you've been in Cleveland.
Absolutely, right.
I mean, let's be honest. I mean, if you got a guy who starts being ranked between 16th and 12th in the league passing, that's going to put mean points on the board, yards being picked up, all that kind of stuff, especially in the passing league. And secondly, you talk about so long, Jimmy. If you're talking to somebody about the round of the 80s, the last time they were really good, the last time they had back-to-back winning seasons, and Bernie Kosar, that person has to be over 30 to have any sort of memory of it.
Right.
Terry Pluto joins us from the Cleveland Plain Dealer on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. And Terry, the other part of this thing, we'll talk ad nauseum about quarterbacks and about the offense, because that really is the big picture story that needs to be resolved, I think, for people to truly feel things are moving in the right direction. But I think it's fair to say on the defensive side, we had a caller a short while ago, you know, express concern over Ray Horton's over the future of filling the defensive coordinator position once, as he said, Ray Horton goes off to be the head coach of another team after the season. So it's already like a foregone conclusion to a fan. I think that's a problem the Browns would love to have, is that their defense did well enough and that this guy does great enough in his position that he's pursued in that light. But overall, doesn't it sound to you like the hiring of Horton, just like the hiring of Turner, has really upped the level of credibility for this team?
Well, because they've done it before, first. And secondly, they went out and gave these guys long-term contracts and really paid them like lower-level NFL head coaches. You know, they're extremely well-paid for coordinators. And I'm just trying to think, who was the last coordinator that was considered so good that the Browns had that another team had to get him to make him a head coach? You know, Bruce Arians was here, you know, years before, that kind of thing. But I don't remember anybody, because they had so much success.
Yeah.
Boy, we got to grab that guy and get him. Let's have that problem, right?
Yeah. You know, the only guy, and he did it himself, I mean, he did it weekly at his press conference, would be Rob Ryan, right?
Right.
I mean, he was a self-promoter.
Yes, but I'm saying, but it wasn't like anybody
made
him a head coach.
No, absolutely.
Because I mean, suddenly this defense and this offense was so transformed. We got to go get this guy. He becomes the hot coordinator and interviews with four teams, and one of them hires.
Yeah.
I mean, when did that happen here? I can't think of it.
Yeah, the only time it almost happened was with Rob Chudzinski back in 2007.
Yeah,
when Baltimore asked for permission to talk to him after they had that 10-6 year, and then the Browns gave him the contract. Here's the number, Terry. In opening games since they've come back in 99, they're 1-13 in the opening game. Yep, 1-13 in the opening game of a season, and only one time have they opened on the road. So most of those are home games. Okay, so I think this game against Miami on September 8th is huge, because I think as we've all lived through this, 0-1 becomes 0-3 in a blink of an eye with them.
Yeah.
You know, they really need to get over this.
And for all the stories of this team was 1-5 or they were 0-3, made the playoffs, the odds on that are, you know, that doesn't happen in Cleveland usually. So I think you're correct, Jimmy. And also, you know, the town is ready for something. They're ready to cheer for some touchdown. You know, it's a remarkable thing. And Jimmy, you've been here since they came, you know, on The Voice since they came back. Remember when they've had a couple of high-scoring games where they lost? People were still kind of buzzed about it just because they were in the end zone.
Kansas City in that opening game when Dwayne Rudd threw his helmet.
Right.
That was a high-scoring game in the opening game of the season.
Right, and everybody was that. But people, well, this might be sort of fun to watch. And
yeah.
I could think of a couple other times where they kind of lost a shootout. And Elisa was exciting because, you know, we could talk all these X's and O's and schemes. A big part of football is entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
And the Browns have been not only bad, but they haven't been very entertaining, you know, because they're boring. So, and the same thing, too, I think, with the 3-4 defense. If it works a lot like what they're describing, then suddenly you have a defense will be fun to watch because there'll be, you know, people coming.
Right.
Yeah,
they haven't been easy on the eyes, Vic.
And they haven't. No. But I'll say this, too. I think that there's another plus here in this whole winning back the hearts and minds of the fan base here and of the city, Terry, is Rob Chudzinski is a growing important part of this because of his unique background as the true consummate Browns fan, and I think that's translated. I mean, I think I was wondering how that would play out. That you view the head coach as the head coach, and you're going to be very critical of his decisions, and a lot of times maybe less personality is better. See Rex Ryan in New York. But I think with Rob, it's just enough to show the fans the way he engaged with them at training camp, right? That, hey, I'm one of you guys, and I feel you, and I get you.
Well, and the big thing, too, is while Rob is, you know, effervescent with the fans, whatever, he isn't you don't sense like Rex Ryan that he has to be center stage. In fact, the opposite. It seems to me these two coordinators have as big a profile here as any two coordinators at the same time. And Chudzinski obviously is more than happy to let that go. I mean, these guys come out and they talk and they say things.
Yeah.
I mean, I enjoy going when they have their press conferences. And I think that's a sign, too, of a rookie head coach who feels pretty self-assured as opposed to, boy, everything's got to be filtered through me. And that's very important, you know that, because paranoid coaches usually don't win a whole lot of games when they're paranoid about people on their staff. Just the opposite here. He empowers them.
You know, we're a long way from the day that Butch Davis relieved Foge Fazio of his duties over in Pittsburgh. Remember that in the one playoff game? And he relieved Foge of his duties as the defensive coordinator that day, and the Browns went on and lost that game.
And that's the last they saw the playoffs.
Yeah, that's right. All right, well, Terry, good stuff. Thanks very much for joining us.
Anytime. Take care, guys.
Thanks, Terry.
Terry Pluto of the Plain Dealer. We're going to take a timeout on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford here on ESPN 850 WKNR.